watch what you say.
Hello, this is Roger Johnson, Northwest Congregation, Sandy Springs, Georgia.
Welcome.
This is Liz Clark, Buffalo, New York.
Okay, so it's 2 minutes after 2 o'clock. I think we'll get started. So my name is Tim Brennan. I'm the treasurer in the financial office of the association, and I'm with Lucia Santini Field, who is chair of our investment. We will get started here. So, first of all, I'm going to mute everybody. We'll do our presentation, and then I'll open up the line afterwards for questions, to try and keep the noise down, the ambient noise down. I would ask everybody, though, to mute your own phone by pressing star 6, and then you can unmute it by pressing star 6 when you do have a question.
All guests have been muted.
Great. So let's get started. We are going to today do the August performance review, and Lucia will lead us through that. We're talking about our outlook and the investment committee meeting that just happened September 1st and 2nd. I want to give you a little bit of a logistical update of where we are with the new limited liability company vehicle. We'll introduce the new SRI committee members, and then we'll also hear from David Stewart about current priorities for the SRI committee. And then we'll, after we do that, we'll open it up for your questions. So there is a PowerPoint presentation that if you did pre-register for the call, you should have received that from Susan Helbert. If you didn't pre-register for the call, you can go to the Common Endowment website, which is uucef.org, uucef.org, and over on the right-hand column should be a link to the presentation that you can follow along. So with that, let me turn it over to Lucia. So did we have fun in August, Lucia?
We did not have any fun in August, and having been in this business for too many decades now, I will say that August does generally tend to be a period where the market, if there is anything unexpected that could possibly have a negative spin, the market is very likely to overreact on the downside, and this past August was not only that type of an experience, but also I think probably the beginning of something that I've sort of been expecting for a little while now, which is an uptick in market volatility, and certainly what we experienced in August in terms of volatility on both the downside and the upside has continued into September. And periods of heightened volatility are not uncommon when, first of all, it's a protracted period of rising prices and valuations are not inexpensive, so not to say that the market is overpriced by historical standards, but it's certainly not inexpensive by historical standards either. And so fairly valued prices in combination with unexpected events and increased uncertainty usually gives rise to increased volatility, and that's happened. Obviously, the numbers that you see in front of you, so for the 1 month down just about 4.5% and year to date down 2.3%, not numbers that anyone ever enjoys seeing, but if you look across the first and the second page, what you will note is that there was almost...
Just to say, we're on slide 3.
Oh, sorry. Yes, the performance page, slides 3 and 4. Both sides of the page, if you're looking at the 1 month and the year-to-date numbers, but primarily the 1 month, there's almost no positive numbers. So correlations were very high across market capitalization in the U.S. market, between the U.S. and other developed markets, between developed and emerging markets, into many segments of the bond market. Certainly on the 1 month, the year to date, the 1 month wasn't quite enough to erode the paltry return, but this month is not over yet. So it was a negative period for pretty much all asset classes, and that is reflected in what you're seeing for the 1 month and the year to date returns for the Common Endowment Fund. Again, not something that we're pleased to see, but not unexpected under the circumstances, because the move from China was completely unexpected, and the market doesn't like surprises. And the implications, although I don't think we are as good at reading the tea leaves coming out of China as our markets are in reading between the lines of everything that the Fed says after its monthly meetings, I think many people are reading between the lines to conclude that things are worse than they are. And clearly, the Fed hasn't reached a conclusion and isn't going to take any action until they are able to form what they feel is a reasonable conclusion. So, and Tim, I'm just wondering, and perhaps I should have said this before when you were saying the mute-unmute thing, but I'm just wondering if we should allow a performance...
Sure. Yeah.
Questions about performance
now.
Yeah,
okay.
If that's okay. I
sure.
think
all guests have been unmuted.
So now if people have questions about a performance or related to performance, we would be pleased to hear your questions now as opposed to having you have to hold them to the end.
This is Dean Rieger from the Sarasota Church. Do you have a sense that, assuming the Fed may act by sometime in December, that the market may calm somewhat? I know there's no way to be sure about that, but do you have a sense?
So I think it will be dependent on the strength of the signals that are coming out of all of the developed market economies. So is the U.S. continuing to add jobs? Is our industrial production continuing to trend in the right direction? Is our consumer sentiment continuing to be more positive than negative? And also, very importantly, are the trends out of the developed markets in Europe continuing to develop in the constructive way that they've been developing year to date? So my sense is that if all those things continue to be overwhelmingly positive and the Fed goes ahead and begins its very gradual planned increase in rates, that that it will be viewed favorably.
Okay.
This is Doug Curran, Marin. What China move were you referring to? I remember they were buying a lot of currency, but what China move were you referring to?
They devalued their currency quite unexpectedly,
mm-hmm.
which signaled to the world that their growth wasn't where they wanted it to be, and so they were wanting to make their output more attractive to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
This is Joe Mayo, Marion
so
Church.
So I guess, go ahead, you go first, sorry.
Okay, sorry. It seems that the last couple of months at least, the problems with that are investments. Are we over-invested in invested?
So I'm very sorry that for some reason, and I think it might be your phone because we weren't having this issue with other questions, but almost every other syllable that you've spoken has not been audible, so I've not been able to understand your question.
Okay, I'll try again. Is that better?
That's better.
It seems the problems we've had are with foreign investments and in developing countries' investments. Are we over-invested in those equities?
On a year-to-date basis, the returns have been negative regardless. Yes, emerging markets far worse, and Europe indeed is worse. But that's a good transition. Question for me to remind us all that this is a long-term investment fund, and the allocations are made with strategic long-term rates of return in mind. And so, what we have been positioning the fund for is what we believe are the most attractive long-term rates of return, and so we believe that the fund is appropriately positioned with an overweight to foreign markets relative to the U.S. based on relative prices and growth rates over the long term. But clearly in the short term, it's not been favorable for investment returns.
Okay, so...
Any other questions?
Lucia, this is Jim Triblum.
Yes.
I would have posed the question the actually opposite way around. Is now that we've had this correction in the international market, would it make sense to go back and look at having our equity distribution look more like the world equity distribution than ours, which is still biased more towards the U.S.?
The committee has been discussing changes, but there have been, I think the current policy reflects the current thought process of the investment committee in consultation with our investment consultant. I don't think it's a dramatic overweight, because there is a significant investment in both emerging and international. But we have been talking about potentially increasing it, but right now the best thinking of the committee is reflected in the asset allocation shown on page 5.
Thank you.
Any other questions related to performance or asset allocation?
This is Bob Bonner from All Souls. I was wondering about the long-term returns are not haven't really been meeting over the last 10 years for us, inflation plus 5%. And how does that impact our distribution, our actual distribution rate and maintaining our endowments? What's a sustainable policy going forward?
So inflation plus 5% is a fairly aggressive target. And it's not unachievable, but over a very long term period, it would be more achievable. And if the last 7 years is unprecedented in economic and market history, as a result of the financial crisis and the most aggressive and unique leadership of the Federal Reserve in helping this country and the rest of the world sidestep something worse than the Great Recession. So we've been in a very unusual period of investment returns, and I do think most investors have been adjusting their models and their expectations downward over the last 7 years as a result of the unprecedented action on the part of the Fed. For government bond yields to be less than inflation for a sustained period of time is just not a normal investing environment.
Yeah, this is Tim Brennan. Just to add to that I think it is wise to look at your spending policy. I think we've talked about this on past calls, that the long-term outlook for economic growth and therefore for equity returns is definitely dampened from the historical trend. So it would be wise to look at those spending policies. 5% is looking quite aggressive these days, and not just based on the last couple of months. And I'm hearing from other institutional investors that I talk to that they are reviewing and generally reducing their spending policies to rates more like 4.5% or 4%. And the UUA itself is going to be going through a process this fall of reviewing our spending policy for next year.
Yes. So, and these reductions have been ongoing, in investing circles over at least the last 5 years, and I would say some of the more conservative organizations are leaning a little under 4 going forward. So it's definitely worth a review at your committee's level.
What is GAA risk parity?
So that is global asset allocation. So that allocation is designed to permit a small number of managers to have broad license to move across the most of the range of asset classes available in the public market, and for some even in part into private markets. In some ways, have tactical investment decisions made for the endowment that the committee, you know, because of the nature of committees and the fact that committees are staffed by volunteers, that they are not able truly to make tactical investment decisions. Committees are really structured to make strategic, long-term decisions. So to the extent that there is any tactical decision-making going on within the endowment, it is within that segment, because those managers are given greater latitude. I will say that that is a category that that the investment committee recently reduced because the long-term performance of at least one of the managers did not meet our expectations. So so that category is now about half as large as it had been.
That sounds wise. I'm noticing GAA risk parity is listed on page 5 of the list of asset allocation, but I don't see corresponding results for GAA risk parity on pages 3 or 4 of the results.
Oh, so it's called GTAA, and it's on the top of page 4.
Yeah.
Sorry
yeah,
that
it.
The labels don't match up exactly.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, and just let me say one other thing. If you look on page 15 of the book, in that section of the book, we have descriptions of each of the managers and their strategies, and
yes.
See a little bit more about the Bridgewater all-weather strategy, which is the risk parity strategy.
Yeah. You know, finally, I wonder if there would be since there's no way to make money these days, including in fixed instruments, would it be wise to invest in a fund that simply holds the stocks that yield dividends?
Well, the fund is a long-term investment vehicle, and it isn't designed to produce the most attractive returns in any environment. This particular environment has slightly more than the normal challenges, but the investment allocations within the fund are designed for the long term, and indeed we do expect that that market is be returning to a more normal market environment in the coming year.
Another one, Lucia, you might want to talk about the illiquid strategies that we're starting to employ to try to increase returns as well, private markets. So
well, we have there have always been allocations to hedge funds in the form of a hedge fund of funds, and recently we have been looking at an allocation to private equity, and are making, have already made one and anticipate making others over time. Private equity and hedge funds traditionally have a better chance in unusual markets such as these, although I will say that for most of the last year, hedge funds and private equity have been struggling as well. That's not to say all hedge funds and all private equity, but considerable numbers. So it's just been a fairly highly correlated market. And And I guess the other thing I'd like to say about dividend stocks is, you know, good dividend stocks ultimately are also products of their sectors and their regions, and so they have risks and challenges in this environment as well. And this endowment does have exposure to those through a variety of the strategies that are employed. So, but the nature of a diversified fund is such that that it will be invested in a range of asset classes, so as to produce the most attractive risk-adjusted returns over time.
Yeah, and that certainly makes sense, choosing your allocations and then sticking with it on the assumption that over a long time some things go up and others go down, and you can play and you can readjust and so on. On the other hand, there exist funds that hold nothing but dividend-yielding stocks organized by asset class. And so one could own such a fund and, if necessary, reduce the allocation in the other corresponding asset class. It just seems as if it's one way to actually have income as opposed to our experience in general here. There may be something wrong with this idea, but I thought I'd mention it.
Well, the 5-year returns for the fund are reasonably attractive, and you know, so I appreciate that that there is appeal in on the income producing side of the ledger, but it's not without risk, and ultimately, the committee is confident that a diversified approach will serve the UUA the best over the long term.
Now, this is Tim. Let me just add a couple of comments on that. So that the fund has not faced any challenges as far as liquidity goes. So most of our assets are highly liquid, even in you know, a declining market. So it's not like we need dividend payout to meet our liquidity, and over time, high dividend paying stocks tend to actually generate lower total return. So our approach is really to look at total return, which is dividends plus appreciation. Then the other thing, just back to the question about the long-term return and distribution rates, I just wanted to point out, we shouldn't get all hung up on exactly where the number is right now, even the 10-year number, because we're coming off of a terrible month. I mean, we'll see where it goes. I stand by the recommendation that you review your distribution rates, but if you look as recently as March, the 10-year return was 6.8%, so almost one full percent higher, because it didn't take into account the really sluggish performance over the summer and then the drop in August. So at 6.8%, you are looking at about 5% plus inflation for that period, which was less than 10%. I'm not saying that means we're going to get back to that quickly, but we are kind of looking at the performance right now after a really bad period in the market. And over the long term, if we take a long-term view, we would expect things to come back to the mean. And that's the approach that the investment committee takes.
This is Dave DeMore up in Brunswick, Maine. I'd like to add something to the comments about dividend stocks. It just seems to me that interest rates are much more likely to rise from here than fall further. And if that's true and interest rates actually do rise, that should put pressure on the prices of dividend-bearing stocks, downward pressure. So
yes, you're absolutely right.
It seems a good time to consider that.
It's absolutely true, as it would on bonds.
Mm-hmm. So this is Hillis Howie at the Midwest Unitarian Universalist Foundation. And I haven't been on too many of these calls, but so I may be asking a naive question, but I noticed under domestic equity that there are this Rumbline, Sands, and Pure Capital. Now, are those the money managers that are actually managing those groups?
Yes.
And is there a description of those in this in the packet here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there is.
My name is John Saphir from Chicago's First Unitarian Church. And I'm wondering about expense ratios. Committee looks at that as they make their investment decisions.
Okay.
And is it possible to show the expense ratios for each of our investments?
Yeah, I could refer you to the investor information memorandum on the website, and that actually has a page in it that shows the expense ratios for every manager. It's certainly something that when the committee is selecting a manager, we look very closely at. While we're not huge because of our size at $175 million, we tend to get very favorable management rates from the managers. You know, often they have cutoffs at different levels. So if you're coming in with $5 or $10 million, you tend to get a pretty good expense ratio. The expense ratios vary very widely depending on the strategy. The Rumbline portfolio, for instance, somebody mentioned a few minutes ago, is a passive strategy that tracks the Russell 1000. And there we pay 12 basis points, or 0.12%, very low. And on the other hand, if you get into a private equity strategy or a hedge fund strategy, then you tend to pay quite a bit more. So, for instance, our Entrust fund of funds is about 1.4%. So there's quite a range there. Overall, if you look at the average percent that is paid to the managers, it's right around just a little bit above a half a percent. So we're paying about 0.55%. But that's all disclosed in the information memorandum.
Okay, that 5.55, that's the median cost to the fund?
It's 0.55%, so just over
55 basis points.
Exactly, and that's, yes, average over all managers.
Okay, thank you.
But I think, asset class by asset class, you're not going to do better than what we get. We have the advantage of using a leading investment consultant that helps us to screen all these managers and find the best managers. In fact, I think at the previous meeting, we asked them to go back and look at all the managers versus their peers and what the expense ratios were. And the report they came back with said that we were doing very well within each asset class, at or better than median for each asset class expense ratio. So it's something the committee pays very close attention to.
Okay. And where is that shown? What's it under?
It's not in this packet. I mean, I could throw it in next time. You go to the website, uucef.org, and go to the investor information memorandum. That's the document that governs the entire fund, gives you all the information you need about the fund. In there is a chart that shows every manager and what the expense ratio is for that manager.
Investor information.
Memorandum, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions there?
I should go ahead and talk a little bit more about the investment committee's action.
All guests have been muted. You can unmute your line by pressing star 6.
So we just muted the lines again so we could get rid of the ambient noise, and Lucia will continue with her report.
And now I'll just summarize the most recent meeting of the investment committee. The most pressing business on the agenda was over the course of the last 3 or 4 months, we had been collecting and analyzing the results of a request for proposal that we sent to 7 or 8 investment consultants. It had been a number of years since we had looked at the services of competitive firms with NEPC, who is and has been the investment consultant to the UUA for a number of years, and we received back at least 6 proposals, and a number of them were quite interesting. We conducted phone interviews with a number of them, and we brought the through the phone interviews, we brought the process down to 2 finalists, one of the finalists being the incumbent, and the other finalist being Cambridge Associates. And it was interesting because Cambridge Associates actually had formerly been the consultant to the Common Endowment in the 90s. They were both very strong proposals, and the committee has not yet rendered its final decision. Indeed, later today, a small subcommittee of the investment committee will be talking with one of the consultants and then making a recommendation to the full committee. So those activities, the in-person finalist interviews with both of the investment consultants, and then discussions and deliberation among the committee members over the relative strengths and weaknesses of those 2 firms occupied most of our time, although with August being having just completed, we certainly spent a little bit of time talking about the market environment and the returns, although we didn't have the ones that you have to look at. We were surmising most of it based on index returns and talking about our long-term allocations and were any changes to asset allocation policy relevant at the time. So no changes were deemed to be appropriate, and I guess the last 2 items discussed were we were looking at another couple of hedge fund managers and ultimately chose not to invest in any of the proposed hedge fund managers for a variety of reasons. And then finally, we were just focused on cash flows within the endowment and ensuring that that we understood in this time of market volatility that we did have sufficient cash available to meet any necessary capital commitments as well as potential redemptions as well as ongoing quarterly payments to congregations and to the associations. So that summarizes the investment committee meeting, which took place on the afternoon of September 1st and the morning and early afternoon of the 2nd.
So maybe I'll just jump into the next item on the agenda here. You know, we've talked in the past on these calls about the legal structure of the Common Endowment Fund and the fact that it's right now it is one and the same with the UUA, so the assets are commingled, and that, you know, of course, all the books are audited very carefully, so there's no question on the accounting. However, as far as liability goes, there is a liability exposure to congregations. So we went through the process of setting up a separate legal entity. It's a UUCEF LLC, or Limited Liability Company. It actually exists, although it is an empty shell right now. It took a long time, but we got it qualified as a 501c3 charity under federal tax law. That finally came through after a long effort. So we are right now at the point where we're going to be moving all the assets into the new entity by the end of the year. And on your end, what that requires is signing a new subscription agreement. So instead of a subscription agreement with the UUA, it will be a subscription agreement with UUCEF LLC. Also an operating agreement. So the limited liability has this thing called an operating agreement, which is basically like the bylaws of a nonprofit organization, and you would sign that as a member. So that will be going out in about a week or 10 days. We'll give you 60 days to take a look at it and get that back to us, and then we hope that the conversion will take place at the end of the calendar year. So December 31st will be in the current configuration, and January 1st it'll be into the new configuration. We can't operate two separate pools, so if anybody does not execute the agreements, then we will return the assets to that congregation. But as far as your experience as a investor in the fund, it should be no different than what it is now. It's still an entity that's overseen by the UUA Board of Trustees. It will have the same investment committee. Everything else is the same. Same managers, same reporting, same access to information. It's just that it will have a different legal structure, which will create what our lawyer called a liability firewall between the investment fund and liabilities of the Unitarian Universalist Association. And then the last thing I wanted to do was just say something about the committee members. So at the June board meeting, the Board of Trustees of the UUA appointed some new members to both the Investment Committee and the SRI Committee. On the Investment Committee, under the bylaws, there is one member of the Investment Committee who also serves on the Socially Responsible Investment Committee, and the idea there is to help the two committees to work in close collaboration. So that person now is David Stewart. David has been serving on the SRI Committee for many years, and now he's going to be serving both committees. So David's on the call. Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Very generous of you to do that. David is advanced education in finance and has actually taught finance at the college level. He brings a lot to the table at the investment committee, both from that perspective and from the perspective of socially responsible investing. And then the committee also named Kathleen Gaffney to the committee. Kathleen had a long career managing a bond portfolio for Lumen Sales. Now she, for the last 2 years or so, has been with Eaton Vance. She's not on the call, so I'll just say that she is a star in the bond management firmament, and we are so lucky to have her on the committee. She'll really bring a great perspective, and I think it's especially timely, given what's going on in the fixed income world, that we'll have that perspective sitting right at the table. And then the SRI committee also has a couple new members. Kristen Faust is a real leader in community investing and affordable housing investing. So she's come on to the committee. And then Kathy Mulvey. Kathy has done tremendous work in the area of conflict minerals and international human rights from an investor perspective. She's with a firm called IRIS, which is a leading socially responsible investing research firm. So I think both committees are as strong as they've ever been. We also have expressed our gratitude to the outgoing members. You've all heard from Carol McMullen. She served on the committee for about 6 years and chaired it for several years, so she provided great service. She has retired from the committee. And then Kimberly Gladman was the person who served both committees with a great background in socially responsible investing and governance research. She has gone off the committee, and we're very grateful to her. So we're coming up close to 3 o'clock. David, did you want to give a quick update on the SRI committee's work?
Sure, I can briefly run through that. So one thing that we're considering, especially given Kathy Mulvey's experience, we're trying to assess all the community investments to assess risk and make sure that that is in line with what we'd like to see it. It's very expensive to do that sort of thing, but because she has that expertise and we've now brought that onto the committee, we now have the opportunity to take a look there and make sure that we're doing the best we can with regard to risk for that 1% of the portfolio of the UUCEF portfolio. Additionally, we've been in the process of creating videos to better educate both congregations and I guess the world at large about social responsible investing, as well as our take on social responsible investing and what we, how we view ourselves and that sort of thing. So keep an eye out on the blog for that, because that should be coming up fairly soon. we also, although we haven't, it's not definitive exactly when we're going to do this yet, but pretty soon we should be doing a webinar, probably with OECO Credit, to highlight the UUCEF matching program for community investments. And so if you don't know about that particular program, I'd encourage you to either ask about it or to look on the website. You can make an investment up to $10,000, and if it's a qualifying investment, the UUCEF will match it. And I believe that is probably all that needs to be said for today.
Okay, great.
Thank you,
David. So we have about 8 minutes left. If there are more questions, I think what I'm going to do, I have the call set up now, so if you press *6, it will unmute you and you can ask a question, but we still won't have all that ambient noise in the background. So *6 if you want to ask a question. We have about 8 minutes left.
I'm getting feedback. I'm curious to know where the new information for the new LLC will be, to whom it will be sent at the church.
Well, whenever you fill out a subscription agreement, you include the contact information. So it will vary from congregation to congregation, but it's whatever you select it. So often it's the treasurer or the chair of the endowment committee, but whoever you filled out on that form as the contact, that's where it will go.
Well, ours is relatively new this past year, but I imagine for some people, you'll have to look back and find out who that is.
Well, no, I mean, because everybody has to keep that up to date, or they can't get access to their money. Whenever the authorized person changes, that's submitted to us and goes into the system, so we know whose signature to look for on changes in distribution rates or withdrawals or whatever. So I believe that's going to be pretty much up to date. And I guess what I would say is, if you don't see anything in a couple weeks, you could contact us. We'll also be putting this on the website, and we'll be putting it out via email to the list. So we have good email contacts with almost everybody. So we'll be using several methods to get the information out. But if you're not hearing from us, you could certainly give us a call in weeks or so.
Okay, thank you.
This is Dave DeMore up in Brunswick, Maine. What percent of the portfolio now is considered to be socially responsible?
I would say approximately 65%. You know, but that said, you know, whenever we hire a manager, we look very closely at their own company's practices. We ask them questions about how they approach their investing from an environmental, social, and governance perspective. So the committee is always bringing that lens to the table. Of the portfolio, if you look at managers who either apply negative screens or who use an ESG approach to their investing, it's at about 65%. But then, you know, we have managers in there like GMO, which does not claim to do that, yet the head of that company, Jeremy Grantham, is probably one of the most articulate spokespersons on climate change risk anywhere. So we're still happy with them, even though they don't categorize themselves as an ESG manager. But it's a constant process. The good news is the world is changing. More and more managers are bringing this to the table. So I would expect that over time that percentage will continue to climb.
Thank you.
And it was an important consideration of the committees in the examination of the candidates for services investment consultant, whether or not the firm was a signatory to the PRI, whether the principles of responsible investing, which were promulgated by the United Nations, really originally. It was a very important consideration.
Yeah, it's really important for us. It's the principal reason that we moved our money over to you, because we found it so difficult to do it by ourselves.
What is the address, or how do I access the blog where I can find the videos you're making?
The videos, David, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the videos are posted yet, but
they're not posted yet.
Right.
They will be on www.uucef.org, so it's just UU Common Endowment Fund, UUCEF. And there are some blog posts on there on a number of different topics you might find interesting. And David, I don't even know, what is our timing for getting those posted to what we have in mind?
So there's an initial set of about 8 that I've taken a look at that I think are reasonably good and could probably be posted. I imagine we'll put a link underneath somewhere a little bit deeper in the website rather than the front page, but it'll be announced, I'm sure, on the blog, which is right there on the front page.
Yeah, we'll also send out an email announcement to everybody when those are posted.
So the two documents, going back to the change to LLC, the two documents we're looking for are by name, a new subscription agreement and an operating agreement. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And after you're done with your question, if you hit *6 again, you'll. Are there other questions? *6 to open up your line.
I have a question. This is Robin Kennedy. You said the two consultants that you're considering right now are Cambridge is the new one, and who is the present one?
New England Pension Consultant.
Okay, thank you.
And as Lucia said, I think it's a very important point. Our RFT very specifically asked a lot of questions around socially responsible investing and ESG investing. We were looking for a firm that had committed real resources to research in this area, to find managers who have that capability, and who could help us construct a portfolio that both incorporated environmental, social, and governance considerations, but also would be competitive with other portfolios as far as risk and return. And we were happy with both of those final candidates.
And when do you hope to make a decision between the two?
It's imminent. I'd say within a week. Okay. Not hearing any other questions. I think I'll bring the call to a close. It's about 2 minutes till 3 o'clock. Thanks everybody for being on the call. Thanks for your patience in this challenging time. If you do have a question which occurs to you as soon as I hang up, please always feel free to contact our office directly. You can, the contact information is on the website. I'm easy to find at treasurer@uua.org, and we will always happy to talk to the investing congregation in the fund. So thanks everybody, and we will talk next quarter.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.